Wednesday, June 6th. The Joint Ways and Means Education Subcommittee. Sorry we're starting a little late. No surprise for those of you who've been to our committee. It's very exciting. Today, we're starting...
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Devlin?
Are you ready for a motion?
Well, I haven't opened the work session, so hold on.
We set this up.
We are ready for a motion.
I think I will offer a motion. No,
I'll withdraw that, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, right. Motion withdrawn. So I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 5012, which is the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. And today, first I'm going to call up Cam Preuss-Frawley, who's the Commissioner for Community College Services, who I believe is going to talk about the affirmative action outreach efforts and plan for the agency, and then followed by Steve Bender, who's going to go over the budget and performance measures. So. And this is a higher we're continuing higher education this week. People, for some reason, forget that community colleges constitute higher education. It's all part of higher education. I don't know why people miss that, but Ms. Preuss-Frawley.
Thank you, Mr.
Good
Chair.
Afternoon.
Members of the committee, for the record, I am Cam Preuss-Frawley, Commissioner of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. And I'm going to give you a very brief overview of our affirmative action update. The affirmative action plan was submitted and accepted by the governor's office in January of this year. Just to highlight a couple of accomplishments, we have set parity goals of women at 70% in our office, and lo and behold, that's about where we are. People of color set a goal of 10% and have actually made some gains in that area and are currently at 15%, and our goal of disabled or challenged individuals in our department, the goal is 6% and we're at 4%. I think if I were to highlight one thing, that is that the department did take responsibility for a federal grant called a Disabled Program Navigator Grant. We shortened that to Navigator. That's to help individuals with disabilities find employment across the state, not just in our office. We received notification, although we have not received a dollar amount, that we're going to be extended for the third year in a row in that grant because of the success we are having at helping individuals with disabilities move into part or full-time employment. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay, so nobody's going to comment on the 70% women goal?
I'm not touching that, Mr. Chair.
You're not going to touch that? Do you think it would be wise if I were to refrain from saying anything?
Up to you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
You have the gavel.
Well, you're the senator. You have all the wisdom, so. I don't have any questions. Do you, Representative Edwards?
I do not, Mr. Chair.
I'll comment. The one who's back, Mr. Chair. I think that's great. But I'm impressed with your goal of people of color. You're way above your goal, and I'm impressed with that. Thank you.
I will ask the question.
Senator Morris.
You've been known to
run on the market.
I won't mention what was said in caucus today.
I guess the question would be, why the 70%?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, it seemed reasonable to have a goal that was reflective of our actual population in the office, and rather than artificially setting something that we knew we couldn't meet. We have a lot of females that work in our office, and although we would like to have perhaps a more even balance, when men apply, they don't stay in the pool particularly long. Maybe they look around. I can look at the office and see how familiar it is. I'm not sure. But we've said it because that's where our trend line has been for the at least the time we have had an affirmative action plan, which is the last 6 years.
Thank you. Thank you. This is why it's such a functional agency in office.
Oh, yes.
I want to make sure I'm not going to get into any trouble. All right, if there are no further questions. Oh, no. Representative Jensen.
I'm just not sure that I heard. Did you say dysfunctional?
No, functional, functional. For those of you who are saying on
the data
internet,
indicated
functional.
Maybe otherwise, but...
Mr. Chair, this committee isn't even close to the goal of 70% women, so we have something to learn.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. This yes, brings me chocolate. So
all right, before we start burying ourselves up, thank you, Ms. Bristol. We appreciate that. Thank you very much. And before I turn over to Steve Bender, I did want to comment. So the plan today is to start to go over the budget, and this committee will not be meeting tomorrow, Thursday, of course not Friday, and then we will reconvene on Monday, and the hope is that on Monday of next week we can actually move this budget out. So,
and Mr. Chairman, just a clarification for the committee, we have some of the documents here. Will we be able to get out at least draft budget notes by tomorrow, so the committee will have some perspective on what the budget notes may be?
Senator Devlin, I'm not. No one has discussed any budget notes with me as of yet.
Okay.
So I cannot guarantee your request because I don't know what will be coming in.
I have certain members not on this committee that were going to be requesting a budget note of the co-chairs about a week ago, so they must not be doing it. Well, I wouldn't say it that way. They are not working very expeditiously.
Perhaps the error is mine. I will check with them and see if they're if I missed something.
Yeah.
But I don't have anything for you. And we do try to get these to you as soon as they are in a final state. I cannot guarantee when that will be. That's out of my control.
And I think it would be a goal of ours to not have any budget notes in this, to make it clean.
Mr. Chairman, I kind of know the discussion on the Senate side about this budget note. It's not an onerous budget note. In fact, I think there might be some people here from the community colleges that are aware of this. I'll put it on the record what it is.
That's cool.
If they just want a discussion, I think, back at a respective committee about where the ultimate decisions are made in terms of the formula for community colleges.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that they want. Because ultimately, the community colleges presidents are going to be deciding how the money is distributed, so they just wanted to report back to the respective committees. That's my understanding of it.
Okay. We're looking forward to seeing actual words on paper. Okay, with that, I'll turn over to Steve Bender of Legislative Fiscal. Mr. Bender, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I wanted to briefly go over some of the aspects of the budget of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. I know that it's been quite some time since you've had this budget before you. I believe this is correct. April 17th was the last day, so it's been a while. And I do want to point out one major aspect of what you are working on right now. This particular bill, House Bill 5012, is for the operating budget of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. There's no capital construction in this bill, and therefore this discussion will not include capital construction as in your work sessions on House Bill 5012. The Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development receives general fund, spends federal funds and other funds. Most of the general fund that is provided by the state to the department is transferred to the community colleges through the community college support fund. And what I would like to do today, Mr. Chair, if it's okay with you, is to really focus on the general fund portion of the budgets and to also look at performance measures. But before going on to that, I just wanted to briefly touch on the other parts of the budget that are not general fund, just as a reminder of the monies that the department is spending and what they're doing with them. And those of you who brought with you your governor's recommended budget binders, I would ask you to refer to page 165 of those binders. If you don't have them with you, I'll be able to discuss what's there, and it'll be easy to follow. But I think if you have it here, you might just want to look at some of these numbers, because what this is this is a list in the governor's in the budget binder that lists the other revenue sources other than the general fund, and basically shows you the magnitude of those funds and the uses of what those funds are being spent on. So, first of all, if you flip ahead to page 166, you'll see that there are a number of federal fund sources that the department, federal funds that the department receives and expends money on. And the largest of these is our funds that come through the Workforce Investment Act Title I-B and that are spent on workforce services to adults, youths, and dislocated workers. The amount of funds is that was originally in the governor's budget for this particular program totaled $112 million. And when we get into this on Monday, you'll see that that number is actually going to be lower than had been anticipated. It will not be quite at that level, but it will still be, you know, over $100 million for the Workforce Investment Act 1B program. The second federal program that the department administers is our funds that are received from the Workforce Investment Act Title II, which are used to support adult basic education programs. But the magnitude of this funding is much less than the funds that are provided for the one-stop services. These only total about $11 million per biennium. And this is not an amount that has been declining or is declined compared to what the governor had projected. These funds are expected to come in on target. There are also some specific grants that the agency has applied for and has received federal funding for. And one of these is an incentive grant received from the Department of Labor. It is in the governor's budget, approximately $750,000 was provided because the state has achieved certain performance, or exceeded, I should say, certain performance expectations set up by the federal government in the workforce program. So the state has received additional funds and are using these to initiate programs in the workforce area. There was about $750,000 of funds in the governor's budget. We'll see that there's actually that number is actually going to triple because of the award of an additional grant award since the governor's budget was compiled. And then finally, in terms of federal funds, there are about $6 million shown here for national emergency grants. These are funds that are provided in the event of mass layoff events, so in situations where there's a large number of layoffs, more than 50 workers, the state is able to apply for national emergency grants under certain circumstances. It's not every mass layoff, but essentially to provide services for employees facing this type of situation where services are provided to help these individuals transition and find new work. So these are the federal programs that the department administers. There are also a number of other funded programs. One of them is that the GED program, which provides a credential for individuals who don't have a high school diploma. This program is actually operated by this agency. So they actually grade the tests and operate this particular program on a budget of about $700,000. They're going to call Perkins funds, which are really federal funds, but because they're passed through the Department of Education, they show up in the Department of Community Colleges budget as other funds. And these are funds that are used to help support the development of professional and technical programs at the community college level. So this isn't used to actually deliver these programs, but they're used to support the development of these types of programs that are offered in community colleges through their professional technical programs. Finally, the other large source of other funds is that the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps is housed in the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. This is a program that provides programs to at-risk youth. They have a program that operates during the school year and another program that operates during the summer months. And this is about $2.3 million in other funds. The primary source of these is the amusement device tax, whose revenues are dedicated, or a portion of their revenues are dedicated to this particular program. Again, on Monday, we will want to look at some of these programs again, at least the funding of them in a bit more detail, because there are some funding aspects that are going on that will require budget adjustments. I don't know if you have any questions about the programs themselves. This would might be a good time to ask them before we move on to the general fund program.
Representative Moore?
What I was hoping to do was to just get kind of a short refresher in these programs that were zero funded, or actually the policy option packages that were zero funded in the LFO recommendation, and if we could get some kind of a bead on why the co-chairs chose to zero fund them.
Sure. Are there other questions? These are general fund.
Yes.
So I didn't know if there were any questions about the other federal funds before we went on. Well, I would then like to go to this one-page sheet that's been distributed to you. It talks about the general fund in the Department of Community College budget and address Representative Morgan's questions, as well as just to provide, to start off, a more general overview to show where the general fund is in this budget, what it's being used for, and how the LFO recommendation, which is, of course, consistent with the co-chair's recommendation, varies with what the governor had proposed. And at the top there, we are showing a portion of the general fund that is distributed through the Community College Support Fund to the 17 community college districts and provided to them as undesignated funds to support the general operations of the colleges. And the amount in the governor's budget is $483 million. Most of that, of course, is in the essential budget level, but there is a package in the governor's budget that will provide $55 million above the essential budget level to bring total funding to essentially $483 million. The last time that we discussed in this subcommittee the co-chair's budget for the Community College Support Fund, the co-chairs had approved $65 million in package 101, which would bring, which brought total funding for the Community College Support Fund to $493 million. But since then, they do have approved an additional $7 million and $7,981 to bring funding for the Community College Support Fund to $500 million. So you can see that the funding now is, that's being proposed, is $17 million above the level that the governor proposed in his budget for the Community College Support Fund. There are a number of other programs that also receive general fund. Not all of these are funded in the LFO recommendation, as you'll see. These are the zero things that are zeroed out. But let me just to start off by talking about the things that are funded in the LFO recommendation, and then we can talk about the things that aren't. The first item is the office operations essential budget level. the office operations, it is the general fund component that supports the state agency operations that are, you know, across the street in the public services building. The most of the employees in the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development are funded and supported and paid by the federal funds, by the programs, the Title I-B funds, and some of the other federal and other funds that are in the department's budget. But there's also general fund provided to support the general fund programs of the department. The largest of the general fund and the principal general fund program of the department is, of course, oversight of community colleges and accounting for a distribution of the community college support fund dollars to the 17 colleges. In terms of oversight, the department has a number of functions in terms of assisting colleges, approving, making recommendations to the State Board of Education regarding curriculum decisions, etc. Also working on making recommendations to the State Board of Education on the distribution of the Community College Support Fund, which determines how the $493 million or $500 million or whatever it is, the amount that you eventually appropriate to them, is distributed to the colleges. So there's about $2.16 million in essential budget level there. The governor also has a policy option package that is being supported. This is not the actual title in the budget, but I've sort of renamed it Office Operations POP. This is policy option package to increase staffing and support in the department for basically primarily the administration of its general fund programs. In fact, the portion that you see here, the $1,085,000, is the portion that's provided to help support the administration of the general fund supported programs. There's also another component, which isn't shown on this page, to increase some support for the federal programs as well. That's not shown on this page because that part will be financed by federal funds. The LFO recommendation, I've just put in as a placeholder the same amount. I'm still working on this number, and we'll have a final recommendation for you by Monday or beforehand, hopefully, so I can distribute that to you in advance. The next item that is funded is Package 107, the statewide OFACS. OFACS is an acronym for the Oregon Financials Aid Exchange, and it is a information system that is used to help assist in determining appropriate financial aid awards for students who are splitting their enrollment at more than one institution. So many students, probably more now than in the past, I think that's the case, though I can't confirm that for a fact, would tend to be enrolling in more than one institution at the same time and splitting their academic program at different institutions. This program assists in helping the institutions get optimal financial aid packages for students in that situation based on what they're eligible for. And this isn't an increase. This is above the essential budget level, $438,000. We are recommending that amount. The $2.2 million in Package 108 is for Health Care Workforce Initiative. It is basically programs, funding to assist colleges in expanding the type of prerequisite programs that are used for students in nursing programs and in other healthcare areas. We can go into more detail into this program either now or on Monday. Another package that is being funded is $1.7 million for the Integrated Management Information System. This is a policy option package. This is one-time funding that will not be repeated will not be automatically included in the essential budget level next biennium. If there are any additional initiatives, they will be again presented as a policy option package designed to integrate a number of independent databases that the community college department currently operates. They have, for example, different data systems for finances, for student data, and those types of things. And this would help to, and for the workforce programs, and this will help to coordinate those into an integrated data system. And then the last item that is in the essential budget level, that is in the budget, is debt service. There is debt service on bonds that have been issued for community college projects. Whenever you approve state support for community college projects, the debt service on those bonds is paid through the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development's budget. The amount that was in the governor's budget of about $5.2 million was designed to pay debt service on the bonds for projects that were approved last session. That was the first time in 25 years that state bonds had been approved, and also to approve debt service on the bonds that were approved prior to the 25-year gap. Those bonds are now old enough that this is the last biennium for which there will be debt service on them. After this, the remaining debt service will all be on the projects that were issued, that were approved in 2005, plus if you choose to approve any additional community college capital construction projects, they would also come in here, but not until the additional projects would not show up until the 2009-11 budget. What we have determined with the assistance of DAS and the department is that the actual debt service is less than had been projected when the governor put the budget together, primarily due to lower interest rates than had been anticipated. And, of course, we are recommending that you only provide funding for debt service that's needed for debt service. That will free up about $1,600,000 of general fund that really isn't needed. So that's why our recommendation is less than the governor's budget amounts. At the bottom of this table, I just wanted to point out a couple sort of gross, large numbers to put things at 50,000-foot level. Community College Support Fund. This repeats some of the numbers that you saw up on the bolded row above, but it also adds one more number that isn't shown there. That is just to show how these numbers compare to the 2005-07 biennium number. The amount of the Community College Support Fund appropriation this biennium that is almost over was approximately $429 million, just short of $429 million. So the amount in the $500 million that is now accommodated in the co-chair's budget does represent a 16.6% increase over the 2005-07 level. In terms of the total agency amount total, which includes primarily out of the $511 million for the agency total, you've got exactly $500 million for the Community College Support Fund. You have $3.5 million for debt service. You have the rest for agency operations and the particular initiatives that are included in the budget. That totals $511 million. The total funding is a 17.8% increase over the amount of the prior biennium. So this is just the general picture here of the budget. If I could go on to Representative Morgan's questions about some of the particular items that were not included in the co-chair's budget.
Can I just interrupt you for a second? Two things. Actually, let me do one first. Senator Devlin has reminded me, because I've forgotten, that here today is Dr. Preston Pulliams from Portland Community College, who was just appointed by the governor as the replacement member on the Board of Higher Education. So congratulations to you.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Confirmed.
And there was also a student named from, I think, Portland State. I don't know their name. So. And I hope I still have a job, because Senator Devlin had to remind me to do that. Secondly is...
I'm trying to keep him in good with this.
Steve, I had a question. So yesterday there was a little bit of confusion where I know we're comparing apples to oranges at some level. So the Oregon University System budget that we passed out, is that yesterday?
Yes.
The one that we passed out yesterday, I read two different accounts. I read that we passed out a budget that was an 18% increase from the previous biennium, and then one that said it was a 22% increase. Can you just clarify that?
Yes, I can.
Sorry to take you off track. Yeah.
The bill that you passed out yesterday, which provided a level of funding for the operating budget of the Oregon University System, was in itself about an 18.4% increase in general fund and lottery funds, unlike community colleges, there are lottery funds as well in the Department of Higher Education's budget. An 18.4% increase over the 2005-07 biennium. The reference to the 22% increase is that there is additional funding for the Department of Higher Education in the co-chair's budget that is not in that particular bill that you just passed out. Where it resides currently is in the bill funding the emergency fund for the upcoming biennium, and it consists of general fund that is in there to pay state employee, to pay for state employee compensation cost increases. I believe there's $125 million left. That may not be the correct number, but there's approximately that much that will be distributed by the emergency board once compensation cost increases amounts are known. They're not known at the current time. The state is still negotiating, is in collective bargaining with its employees, and we don't know what the compensation packages will be. But these are monies that are set aside with the expectation that they'll be needed. They may not all be needed, and last biennium, not the full amount turned out to be needed. But these are additional funds that will be distributed to pay for salary and benefit cost increases for state employees. The 22% figure is based on an assumption that it would be reasonable to assume that higher ed would receive approximately an additional $31 million out of that $125 million. That is not a certainty. It's not known. That's how much they received last biennium from a smaller total amount. So if they were to receive that amount, it would be about a 22% increase. The Community College Support Fund will not receive any funds from the State Employee Compensation Special Purpose and Emergency Board appropriation because that is only available to pay compensation costs for state employees, and community college employees are employees of their local college districts.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, before anyone gets too carried away with percentages here, if Mr. Bender might comment, too, there are two items here I wanted to ask questions about, but I'll go to the first one in terms of percentages. Okay. Another difference, and I know that community colleges may not be intending to do anything beyond this, but when you look at the overall increase in terms of operating budget in OUS, it's significantly less than that percentage because we have also got an understanding with the Board of Higher Education, and it's in the budget note, that undergraduate tuition will be held to a relatively low percentage increase. So the net percent increase in operating is significantly less than those percentages.
That is correct.
Okay. The one other thing, so not the interesting thing here, on the sheet that you have for the Community College Support Fund, and we've had this discussion in the past, the number two-thirds down the way of the page on Community College Support Fund is at $428,774,000. The EBL actually is lower than that, not much, but the EBL is actually lower than that.
That's correct.
Now, we would normally expect this number, because it's treated like another service and supplies, in a sense, or we use different terminology here, but we would normally expect that number to only go up by a few percentage points because we don't account for it in the normal way we account for an EBL. Can you explain why the number is actually lower?
Yes. way that the essential budget level is calculated for community colleges is by looking at the total amount of funding provided to community colleges from public sources, which is to say both the general fund that the legislature appropriates plus the property taxes that community colleges receive for operations. It's not any capital or bond property taxes, but the property taxes that they are levying for operations. It is the combination of funding from these two sources that is considered, we look at as the base, upon which we then allow certain cost increases in order to calculate an essential budget level. Now, the state uses a percentage increase that's applied for special payments because of the fact that community college costs are not under state control. It is the independent community college boards that make decisions that determine what the costs are. For example, as with most state programs and certainly with education programs, the primary cost of operating them is the cost of compensation for employees and the compensation levels, and then decisions as to how many employees to hire are not made by this body. They are made by the 17 individual community college district boards. So we don't have a situation in the state budget where we are trying to set a number of employees and then fund them. Instead, we're trying to assure that a total amount of public funding is available and that there's some increase in this public funding to account for cost increases. It's the same that we apply for special payments, the same rate that we apply for special payments throughout the state budget. I believe that was 3.4% this past biennium. 3.1% increase. So, absent other things going on, we would expect the number that you were referring to, Senator Devlin, the 428, to be about 3.1% the top number, the essential budget level, to be about 3.1% above the amount that is in the shown for the prior biennium level. But because we're looking at both the combination of funds from both property taxes and general fund, the mathematics of this is if the property tax component increases by more than the rate of inflation that we're allowing, that is to say the actual dollar revenues that are collected, after all said and done, if that's increasing at a greater rate, the state's share, which is provides the rest of the money that's needed to meet that essential budget level cost, will be constant or go down. And in this case, it was almost flat, very close to being flat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that question.
Senator Morse.
As a follow-up to that, if a community college issued a local operating levy, or what you're saying is that they may achieve greater local support, but their state support would then go down?
There is the issue here of what the individual college would receive and what would be included in the essential budget level for the amount that would be calculated as the state required contribution system-wide. And to the extent that operating levies are approved that would increase the total amount of property tax collections, that would, in the calculation, show up as a reduced need for the state in order to provide the essential budget level statewide. But the individual college would continue to have more funds under the way that the Community College Support Fund formula works. Anyone thinks I said the wrong thing, please let me know. I feel pretty confident. With all those people in the room.
That's a dangerous thing to say.
And Mr. Chairman,
Senator Dillon,
if probably either Senator Deckard or Representative Barnhart might want to comment too, or other members too, the practicality of a community college going out and seeking a separate five-year levy, which would be the maximum, is very slim.
given what's left in most communities in the Measure 5 cap and in the fact that the parties under that will be the community colleges, the ESPs, and the local school system.
Representative Barnard.
Thank you. Community colleges are able to raise funds under Measure 5 that are not allowed under Measure 50. Is that right?
I don't feel like I would be the best person to answer.
Probably not. Okay. I think they're subject to the same rules as other school boards are in that respect.
Mr. Chairman, we're getting on what increment is left.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the question they would always be going out, obviously, in many cases, school districts that have felt that they could go out and get approval for the increment have done that. Some have gone out and thought they could get approval and have not.
And the moment you do that, you'd be in compression.
Yeah.
Because of those school districts that have already got money. Thank you. That's exactly right. Yeah. So I think it's very close to zero is the amount that could be raised that way.
Yeah, we've got heads nodding.
Up and down. And if I could, Mr. Chair, additionally, I think the legislature probably made an error several years ago. At the time, it seemed like the right decision to make. Obviously, we wouldn't have done it. But the community colleges have had trouble raising money for a number of things recently from local voters, and there seems to be a disconnect currently between the interests of voters and the interests of the community colleges, not in real terms, but in terms of sentiment, which might be connected to the fact that many of the community service programs and community service classes that used to be offered were cut at the suggestion, essentially, of the legislature. As I look at that now, I think that was a significant error because it disconnects the community from the community college, except for those students who actually are attending college preparation classes and other things of that sort in the meantime. And this, I know it's very late in the game to be discussing that for this session, but opening that issue, I think, is an important one, and we might actually want to talk in the long run about revisiting that decision and trying to restore some of those programs.
Thank you, Representative. Leave it to the legislature to take community out of the community college.
Mr. Chair, I didn't say that.
Oh, okay. All right, that was my
reporter writing that down.
All right, Mr. Bender, are we moving on? I think Representative Morgan had a question for it.
Representative Morgan's question was she asked for additional information on those packages that are not funded, that were proposed, I should say, by the governor and not included by the co-chairs. And let's go through those. The first of these packages is a package for just under $1 million for career pathways. The purpose of this package was, or is, I guess the package still technically exists, is that to provide or to develop programs, to assist community colleges in developing programs that would be of short duration and that would be designed to train individuals or to qualify individuals for jobs that are in demand in their local area. So it would be, in essence, in a nutshell, I believe, the intention is to help people, to make available to individuals programs where they can get trained for jobs that are available in the local area that won't take 2 years to complete or even a whole year to complete. In many cases, these programs are designed to be of a much shorter duration and thereby to be make it more likely that persons will be able to complete them and to move on to other jobs that are available in the area. This would be $1 million. I think there are efforts that are intended to. These are programs that community colleges have been working on without these funds. These funds were designed to supplement this activity. And I do believe that there's expectation that even without the funds, these efforts would not continue, would not be discontinued entirely. There would still be efforts of community colleges to develop these programs in their local areas. There would just not be the central state coordination of this function and assistance. Again, in terms of questions of why these, and I'll speak to all of them at once, why these packages were not approved in the co-chair's budget. Again, as always, there's always the question of limited funds and other priorities that are being placed at a higher level in the co-chair's budget compared to the priorities that the governor had in his budget. Also, though, in some cases, there were questions about the availability of federal workforce funds that could be used for some of these programs, and in some cases there were concerns about not performance outcomes that were not clearly defined or as to what the program expectations could be.
Senator, Mr. Chairman, just a brief comment. I think also is taking into consideration that some of it was reaction from the co-chairs to what they were hearing from committee members and the chair and the vice chair. Recall people's memory is that the co-chairs had put out a budget that was at $453 million. I think to a person on the committee, people were very unhappy with that number. And when we asked for people for what their highest priorities were, they were basically saying their highest priority was to get that support number up. So that's, I mean, that's part of it is the reaction of the co-chairs to what they were hearing from the committee.
Thank you, Senator. And I think in a further identification of what Senator Devlin was just saying is if you look at the table here, you'll see that Community College Support Fund is now $17 million above the governor's budget, whereas in total, funding is only $3 million above. Clearly, what the co-chair's budget is seeking to do is to help, is seeking to shift some funds from some of these lines below the Community College Support Fund into the Community College Support Fund. That is how one way in which the two budgets clearly differ as to where the funds are being allocated, because in total, the difference is only about $3 million. The next item that was in the budget of the governor that is not included in the co-chair's budget is package 111, virtual learning, was $150,000 to assist colleges in their distance education, development of distance education coursework. I think there was a concern that with this level of money, which was never large to begin with, the outcomes were not expected to be very large. And when the department was asked, as all departments were, to present their priorities, I believe this was the lowest priority of the department for the packages that were available. The package 112 was a $1.1 million package. The purpose of this package was to develop a workforce and career readiness certification program. This is a program that would provide a certificate that would be different than many of the other types of certificates that people who are seeking jobs have. For example, it would not be a high school diploma, a GED. Instead, it would be a certificate that the holder could show that they had achieved workforce readiness skills. And the purpose of this program was to develop that type of certification program. And I think this just was not one of the highest priorities, and it did not make it into the co-chair's budget. The largest of the items that did not make it into the co-chair's budget was the $10 million for the Skill Up program. The Skill Up program basically is $10 million of general fund that is designed to supplement the Title I-B funds that are coming from the federal government by providing similar types of workforce services, but focused on individuals that the restrictions in Title I-B funding make it difficult to serve from those funds. Basically, SkillUp was designed to focus more on the workers who are currently employed and seeking to improve or move into a better job. And a lot of the, most of the the Workforce Investment Act funds are designated for individuals who have not been into the workforce yet and are trying to get into the workforce for the first time, or who are not currently in the workforce and are trying to get the skills to get back into the workforce. And I think that this was viewed as an admirable program, but perhaps of less priority than community college support fund in this budget cycle.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
A couple of questions that aren't related to this. I'm curious, with reference to the other funds that we looked at in the governor's budget, what the total of those funds is compared to the funds that the system is getting in the current biennium. Is it comparable, or is it down, or is it up?
The federal funds will be down from the prior biennium level. I don't think I brought that with me. Perhaps someone from the department would have that information or could find it and report and respond with more detail to Representative Morgan's question. But they are down.
Thank you. For the record, Kim Boyce, Brawley, Commissioner. Steve Bender is correct. Our federal funds have been notified that we're $7.5 million less in the coming year than we had been. We've been at about $56 million for the WIA Title I-B funds. We're at $49 million. That's our expected. The other federal funds received, the Title II, the adult basic education funds, are flat. In respect to other funds, the GED, the Carl Perkins, and Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, the Conservation Corps is going to be up a little, but otherwise the other two are also very level.
And then the other question that I had related to the local property tax collections, do you have any information about, I would assume that because of the construction industry activity, that those are up somewhat?
Yes, they are up, and indeed they're up by more than the 3.1%. That was the reason why there was no increase in the essential budget level general fund calculation. Let me see if I have that number with me here. I apologize for not having
Mr. Bender, perhaps that would be something that we could have on Monday.
Yes, absolutely. I do apologize.
And what I'm curious about is just trying to get some kind of relative per student funding number, if it's possible, from the current biennium to the one that we're budgeting for right now.
Absolutely. We can do that for you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you. I have a related question. I have a note based on the original presentation indicating that at the governor's recommended budget level, the system could serve an additional 3,500 students. So I'm wondering now at the co-chair's budget level, how many more students the system could serve. I don't expect that the number is linear, so I'm reluctant to try to calculate that number on my own.
This was a number that was the department provided, and I would defer to them for that response to that question.
For the record, Kim Price-Brawley, and I have to admit to having not
actually run that number. I apologize. I'll bring that back on Monday.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you.
If I might, Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, you asked just now a question about funding per student. You were after, I'm just clarifying, combination of property tax and general fund, or one or the other?
Globally, what I see happening here is a governor's budget and an LFO recommendation that's virtually the same number. It's distributed somewhat differently. The LFO recommendation would appear to me to give the system more freedom over how to allocate the money.
Mm-hmm.
But what I am very curious about, given that you have federal dollars coming down, local property tax money coming up, realize this is going to be a quick and dirty number that probably doesn't have much relativity to an actual application. But I'm curious about the just relatively the amount of money that would be appropriated or would be rolled together, divided by the FTEs for this budget period, and then the same number for the next budget period, so that we have some idea of whether this is straight across, going up, how fast, and just a bigger picture than we get with just the general fund piece of this.
Absolutely.
Thank you. All right, Representative Morgan. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don't move. This is for you. My colleagues each have slightly different questions. I think it would be beneficial to the extent you can if you can disaggregate that data, because every community college is in a different spot. And an average number may not be very useful to us.
I can do that.
Thank you.
May I just comment?
Moore.
I would be curious, Cam, how different that number is going to be given the funding formula.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, at this point in time, there still remains about a $1,000 difference between the highest paid student in the state because of property taxes and what the lowest college earns per student, because the distribution formula model that is currently in play has a 6-year implementation timeline, and we would only be beginning year 3. So there is still disparity between the highest and the lowest funded students.
Okay. Well, then I would also appreciate seeing what Representative Barnhart is requesting.
And I will bring that information back at the $500 million level.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for those questions. Further questions?
Are there any other questions on this element?
Okay.
It doesn't appear so.
We did, Mr. Chair, if you would like, begin talking about performance measures. We have distributed to you today a list of the agency's performance measures and targets. It's also the same item is also available in your governor's recommended budget binder. If you have your other binder with you, which is the agency's presentation binder, there are some items there that will also be useful to look at as we go through this. But we did want to talk briefly about what it is that the agency is measuring as including its key performance measures of its activity. And a number of these refer to numbers of GED applicants that are successful. As you know, as we stated earlier today, the department is actually operating and providing the GED testing service in the state. And you could see that this is a situation where they have set as a target the percent of applicants who are successful. I should add that the department does not actually provide training for individuals who are seeking to take the test. It is just administering the testing. And So there's it's not as if the department itself, by its actions of administration, can increase that. I don't even think they write the question, so you can't make the test easier. But this is a performance measure here. There are a number of performance measures related to the agency's participation in the federal workforce programs. These performance measures in many cases are developed as part of participation of the agency in the federal program. The federal government would require certain performance measures. And just to give you some idea and some of these, in the program for youth workers, the percent of these youth who exit the program successfully is about 72%. It's been close to the 70% range. The percentage of these youth who become employed upon exit is closer to the 75% range. There are also some performance measures related to the adult and dislocated worker programs of the federal fund operations. In terms of programs that are more directly supported by general fund, if you start looking at programs beginning with number 7, talking about the programs in community colleges of students that are in basic skills and English as second language programs, the percentage of students who complete these programs successfully, this number has been under 50%, and the targets are not especially, for improvement, are not especially aggressive. They remain under 50% through 2008 and just become a bit higher than 50% in 2009. I think if there are any concerns or questions that members have as to the level of targets and as to whether if you have concerns that these targets may be too high or too low, this would be the time to ask the agency why these targets are what they are.
Mr. Chair, I'm a little disturbed by these numbers, so if you don't mind.
Did you want Cam to come back up? Mm-hmm. Okay. And while Cam's walking up, the way you described Performance Measure 1 and the relationship between what the college does and the measure, could you explain the rationale behind the performance measure?
What the department does is the department administers the test, and it basically administers the GED program. In order to achieve a GED, you have to pass a series of tests that are developed at the national level. And there are programs that are provided at community colleges, by community colleges and high schools and other locations for people who wish to study for this exam. So you don't have to just go in without having studied with assistance. So you're able, if you want to do it that way, you can do it that way as well. The performance, since this is a program, though, that the department administers, they are interested in the success that applicants to this program have in terms of getting their GEDs. So they have included this as a performance measure, though I do think that the department itself would have limited ability to have operations that would affect this particular measure. I don't know if the commissioner has a different opinion as to what the department's role could be in changing actual success rates for this particular exam.
Mr. Chair, I think to your question about GED applicants, Mr. Bender is right. The department is the administrative entity for the GED test. Many of the community colleges, if not all the community colleges, do provide preparation, courses in preparation. And so, although we don't have direct impact, we believe that the college is in conversation with the colleges. We believe we can improve the number of GED applicants who are certificated, if you will. But because it's an open entry, open exit kind of program, the students do come and go perhaps at their whim, many come very specifically to take the test and be on their way either to the labor market, to the military, or perhaps on to college. So you're exactly right. It's not a direct relationship with the department.
So somebody can come off the street and take the test, having taken no, and yet we're measuring the success rate of because the college administers the test.
So. That's correct. It's important. We believe it's important whether we are responsible for it or not, because it is an educational attainment certificate. And it seems important that somewhere in the state we are tracking and focusing on that attainment of a GED.
Representative Edwards?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's important to distinguish between a reasonable key performance measure versus data the system should track as a matter of course. I would invite Cam to comment on the process of developing the key performance measures. We've heard from other agencies that there are a number of measures for which they have very little, if any, influence. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at measures like key performance measure number 9, which is about the percentage of small business development center, pre-venture / startup entrepreneurs with a completed business plan who start a business. There are a number of factors far beyond the development of a business plan that impact the ability of someone to start a business. I know in part because I am a founder of a business. So I'm just curious about the process and whether you have recommendations for us in terms of refining the process to ensure that the measures we do adopt are indeed intimately related to the mission and responsibility of the agency involved.
Excellent question. Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, to number 9 specifically, a snippet of history is that the Small Business Development Centers used to be housed or administered through the community college, what was then the Office of Community College Services. During the interim, there was a robust conversation about the SBDCs and the performance measures that they were held to, because the majority of small business development centers are located in community colleges, even though they're no longer funded through our department. We felt it was important that they be part of our key performance measure, just similarly to the GED, because it helps those who aren't intimately involved with the community college and the diversity of mission that they have know the multiplicity of efforts that happen within the community. So that's why I actually requested to have the performance measure listed. Now, the appropriateness of the actual measurement here, we took from the Small Business Development Centers and Economic Development, Economic and Community Development as they built it. So we can go back and ask them if they believe this is appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Chair Fowler? Actually, I just have a comment, and that is, again, I would just go back to drawing a distinction between measures that are good to track so that you can do your own self-assessment versus measures for which we as a legislative assembly should hold you accountable.
Thank you very much. And then I'm getting back to Senator Walker's questions, but I don't want to sort of took a detour. That was my fault, so... Did you want to restate, Senator Walker?
Ms. Presbrough, can you explain why the target and the actuals are so low on performance measure number 7, English as a second language students?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I can at least begin an explanation. The measure itself looks at an arbitrary period of time. An academic year. Most adult basic skills students when they participate for longer than a year. Many of the individuals who participate here read at less than the eighth grade level. So the time it takes to move them from a level of operating to a non-literacy or illiteracy to literacy is generally more than one academic year. We also have, if you will recall from our presentation at when we were doing when we were here before, over 50% of the students in adult basic skills are English language learners, which is an additional burden for how do they move to their literacy levels. I think I would like to be in conversation with the college, the adult basic skills directors, and bring back a more fully, more quantified rather than anecdotal answer to your question.
Well, before Mr. Chair, I just want to follow up and make sure I understand. Are they reading at less than eighth grade level in their own language or in English?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, both. Sometimes both.
Thanks, Senator Walker.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, I know that the committee meeting is almost over, and I think that instead of going through the rest of these performance measures and their targets, it might be useful just to comment briefly about some of the performance impacts of the funding packages that you are considering, as have been indicated in by the agency in its presentation. Just to clarify and remind you that this time is the first session that we've asked agencies to do something specific, which is to indicate for a policy option package how that would affect the targets of key performance measures or other measurable outcomes if you were to go ahead and improve those. So, of course, the largest funding package in the governor's budget, this was done at the governor's budget level, not at the co-chair's budget level, but the largest funding package was the state support to community colleges, which is the governor's package, $55 million in funding above the essential budget level for the community college support fund. And the agency was asked to indicate what the impact would be of providing these funds. If you have your agency presentation binder with you, you can find this response in behind the day three tab on page 18. Otherwise, if you don't have that or there's not someone else's you can look on to, I can mention that the information that was submitted showed that the impact of the $55 million would be to, on performance measure 12, increase the number of professional technical degrees and certificates by 15 in the 2008-2009 academic year, and to not have an impact on associate degree completion or really essentially to have any other impacts. The legislative fiscal office was concerned with this report in that that's an awful lot of money to get 15 additional people professional technical degrees or certificates. So we have been discussing with the department to understand why this was what they had represented. And after some discussions with them, I think it became clear that perhaps because this was a new exercise and we didn't really talk with them a lot before they submitted their responses, that perhaps that the way that they submitted it, it's not really clear as to what this funding would perceivably achieve. And in order to talk about that, I would ask you to look at this one-page sheet that was distributed to you today. It's the only sheet that has a chart on it in color. And to give you a better idea of what the impact, the projected impact of this funding is, it shows here that currently, in the current academic year, if you look at the year where it says 2007, that's the current academic year, it's projected that the colleges combined will award 4,627 degrees or certificates in professional technical programs. Again, the professional technical programs are the field of academic programs offered by the institutions that typically will result in some type of degree or certificate that is used for a specific to qualify for a specific occupation, as opposed to a more general type of degree that might be used to transfer to a four-year institution. Though, of course, people with these degrees can do that. But 4627, with the funding at the governor's level, it is expected that there will be an increase to in 2010 to approximately 5,407 professional technical degrees being awarded. So there is an impact that is being projected of the impact of funding on the ability of the colleges to maintain programs that award professional and technical degrees or certificates. And we see an increase of almost 800 awards in this period of time, which is about, I think it was an 18% increase in the number of professional and technical degrees as a result of this. The reason for the initial report where there are only 15 is it had to do with the fact that the targets had not been reset for so long that performance was way under the initial target. And I think it's important to realize that with this funding, there is well more than 15 additional degrees that are anticipated. We also asked the department, and I believe that there will be more information for you on Monday, to talk about similar changes in the number of associate's degrees that would be offered, and they will be working on that and providing some additional information on all of these packages to get a better understanding of what people can get for the money.
Not that the numbers necessarily indicate everything that you get for the
No, of course
yes.
Not.
All right, Senator Morse.
Thank you. I think the Commerce Voters 13 and 14 will be in that session.
Same numbers.
13, yes. Let me see what I can count again what 14 is. Let's
start here.
Yes, I think we'll be talking about that.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, it looks like the senators have to go to the floor. So with that, I'm going to close the work session on 5012, and we are adjourned. Thank you very much.